Blog Talk Radio.
Never time at all. You can never ever leave without leaving a piece of you. And our lives forever change. We will never be the same. The more you change, the less you feel. Believe, believe in me. Believe, believe that life can change, that you're not stuck in vain. We're not the same, we're different tonight. Tonight, tonight. So bright tonight, tonight. And you know you're never sure, but you're sure you could be right. If you held yourself to life, and the embers never fade in your city by the lake, the place where you were born. Believe, believe in me. Believe, believe. The resolute urgency of now. If you believe there's not a chance tonight. Tonight, tonight, so bright. Tonight, tonight. We'll crucify the insincere tonight. We'll make things right, we'll feel it all tonight. We'll find a way to offer up the night tonight. The indescribable moments of your life tonight. The impossible is possible. Tonight, believe in me as I believe in you. Tonight, 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 tonight.
Well, Billy Corgan's got one of the strangest voices in rock, and it's very strong, though, I've got to tell you. You get to the end of that song, and you feel like you've been holding your breath underwater for 25 seconds and just hoping for it to finish. Anyway, I almost got the last note. Hello, everybody. This is AP Taylor. We're on a team of Voices Radio on Blog Talk, and you've stumbled upon our radio show. And if you do want to go and find us, please go to allpoetry.com. get yourself a free account and then wander over to the group, a team of voices, and Deborah Lee will be at the door. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I am well. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. And Hannah, how are you?
I'm fine. Happy birthday.
Excellent. Thank you. And as you've noted, it is my birthday. And so I understand we're going to do some things for my birthday, that some of which I know and most of which I don't. And so at this particular point in time, I'm going to hand over to Deb to direct proceedings. Deb, we're in your hands.
Thank you much. And before I do my spiel, let's say hello to Linda, a.k.a. Liquid Damage. Hey, doll, welcome to the show.
Hey,
hi,
Deb. Hey, AP. Happy birthday, my darling. It's so cool.
Thank you.
Are you old
exactly
now?
My birthday. I was old before,
Are you old now?
I believe me, I was old before. I'm even older now.
You're only as old as you feel.
That is really true, and I'm still there, and I'm still feeling, and all that. So you know, I must be okay.
Right on.
So,
awesome.
You know.
So here's the thing. We do have some of your poems chosen. We even have, part 7 of the audio drama that Gonzo provides,
yes.
We have a poem specifically for you or two in the mix. But what I wanted to do is say that when I was listening to the show that you guys did for me, Sweet had people say stuff that they remember. And you had mentioned that night you sang from the hotel. And
yes.
I couldn't help but laugh because that would be one of my first ones, too, because here I thought this poor man is sick as a dog. He's and at the time, you know, I thought, I've said this before, I thought you were a traveling salesman. So I'm picturing you by yourself traveling the world in a motel room sick and still calling to sing me a birthday song. And that has stuck with me all this time. And that was 2017, I think. But before that, in 2016, when I trained you in the studio at our last gig, and it was just like we hit it off right away, and it was so much fun to work with you that you co-hosted with me, and all around, back and forth we go. And I had said way back in 2016 that you were one of the best men that I've never met. I know you've heard me say that before. And here we are in 2022, and I can say I still agree with that original statement. And I'm going to do my teeny little poem and then kick everything into gear. So if you would click on that, you'll know what a few of the things are, but maybe somebody else won't get it. But hey, it's about AP, so
here we go.
Bear with us. It's
Thank
called
you.
As He Shows His Prowess. So here we go.
And
I have to tell you that it's really hard not to say malice when I get to the mouse word. But anyhow, here we go.
Yes.
He's the lion, not the mouse. So he roars with vim and verb like the jungle kings. Over the yellow brick pathway he soars and travels, writing the poems he sings. Scribbling the heat with rhyme and flow from an airplane seat or at home. Or shaping the poetry, stealing the show from jotting the lines into a palindrome. Then channeling poets, Poe, and banjo. His voice loves the lady and the guys, too. Wrapping all in the spell of his poetry net. Reading poems or a grocery list or two. Happy birthday to this birthday boy. One of the best men I've never met. Thanks for being you. And I don't want comments. I'm just going to kick this show right into gear.
Put them on.
No, really, come on, because there's quite a few here. And most importantly is to say that I don't know, quite a few of us were pretty profoundly struck when you shared information on the animals that Noah forgot. And there was just
yes.
something about it. I mean, it really stuck with me. It totally broke my heart that why wasn't there kangaroos and platypus on the ark? And I never would
yes.
have thought of it. So it was really cool.
Yes.
So the theme tonight is some of the amazing poems on those critters that didn't make it to the ark.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was hoping that you could kick it off by reading his foreword or preface or whatever you would like to call it, and then
yes.
Linda's going to read one of the poems from the book. So
lovely.
If you would read that, that would be fantastic.
I'm looking at the first edition of that book up on my shelf there, but this is Australian Scenery. It's by Banjo, and it goes a little bit like this. The mountains. A land of somber, silent hills where mountain cattle go, where twisted tracks on sidelings deep, where giant gum trees grow. And the wind replies in the river oaks to the song of the stream below, a land where the hills keep watch and ward, silent and wide awake, as those who sit by a dead campfire and wait for the dawn to break, or those who watch by the holy cross for the dead Redeemer's sake. A land where silence lies so deep that sound itself is dead, and a gaunt grey bird like a homeless soul drifts noiseless overhead. And the world's great story is left untold, and the message is left unsaid. The plains. A land as far as the eye can see, where the waving grasses grow, or the plains are blackened and burnt and bare, where the false mirages go, like shifting symbols of hope deferred, land where you never know, land of plenty or land of want, where the grey companions dance, feast or famine or hope or fear, and in all things land of chance, where nature pampers or nature slays in a ruthless red romance, and we catch a sound of a fairy song as the wind goes whipping by, or a scent like incense drifts along from the herbage ripe and dry, or the dust storms dance on their balloon ballroom floor where the bones of the cattle lie. End poem.
Wow.
Way cool. And I think for some reason that I remember you reading this one before, because that was the first time I believe that you discussed with us the Holy Cross.
Mm.
And how much
yeah.
you like the flag. But, as I said, I went looking for this, and it is what led me to those forgotten animals. So,
yes.
There won't be a lot of need for commenting tonight, except for, you know, the poet's original poems and the stuff that we have you read of your own. So I'm just going to go directly into the poem that Linda chose from that book and put it on the wall.
Yes.
And Linda, if there was anything you wanted to say or whatever before you read, you go right ahead. It's your turn.
Okay.
So... there you go.
Yeah, I just want to say, AP, you're a really good guy. And I love you from afar for the person that you are. And I hope you have a really, really happy birthday. I hope everything goes well. And with that being said, I'm going to read. You're very welcome. Weary Will by Banjo Patterson. The strongest creature for his size, but least equipped for combat, that dwells beneath Australian skies, is Weary Will the Wombat. He digs his homestead underground. He never shrewd nor clever, for kangaroos can leap and bound, but wombats dig forever. The boundary's rider's netting fence excites his irritation. It is to his untutored sense his pet abomination. And when to pass, if he desires, upon his task he'll center and dig a hole beneath the wires through which the dingoes enter. And when the block the hole they strain with logs and stones and rubble, Bill Wombat digs it out again without the slightest trouble. The boundary rides bows to fate, admits he's made a blunder, and rigs a little swinging gate to let Bill Wombat under. So most contentedly he goes between his haunt and burrow. He does the only thing he knows and does it very thorough. In poem.
It's a cute poem. It's, I mean, and it is. I mean, wombats, that's what they do. They dig bloody great big holes. There was one in my former father-in-law's garage, and it was just this massive hole, and you know,
oh, wow.
Wombat, dig a hole that big. But they are equipped for combat, but they're the strangest combat animals you've ever seen because they've actually got a spur near their back leg that's poisonous. And so the only way they can attack somebody is by reversing into them with butt.
Like the platypus.
Yeah. It's a common thing. So
I like wombats. I love their nose, and they remind me of a quokka.
Yeah.
Quokka? Is that how you pronounce it, quokka?
Yeah.
Who are so cute. But wombats have that same cute face to them, so I love wombats. That's why I picked this poem.
No, they're very gentle animals, actually. They just sort of wander along and, you know, look after themselves, really, and dig holes. You know, they're kind of fun.
Right. So how poisonous are they?
Not very, for all of that. It's an annoyance. It's not anything more. It just would sting, Linda. It's not serious.
Because I never knew that about wombats. I know that about platypus. They have that big hook on their back legs that are very poisonous.
Yeah.
Very poisonous.
Platypus are far more dangerous than wombats. Yeah, absolutely. A lot quicker, platypus too. Wombat's very slow. You can't get away from a wombat. There's something wrong.
Yeah. Very cool.
No, they're fun animals.
Well, I must say, I have to go. I have to do church stuff and give my husband a haircut before church. And I wish I could stay the night. But I thank you very much for last night and for being you. And I will talk to you soon, AP. Have a lovely birthday.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for calling, doll.
Bye, Deb. Sorry I can't stay.
No. No worries. It's all perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Awesome.
Now, where are we going?
Yeah. Now, I thought that maybe while the night is still fresh, we would get Hatter to read the poem that he chose from the book to read for you. Already, Hatter?
Yeah. Yep. Why That Jackass Laughs, the title.
Mm-hmm.
The boastful crow and the laughing jack were telling tales of the outer back, then traveling far and wide and the back of brook and the queen's haunt beside. There isn't a bird in the bush can go as far as me, said the old black crow. There isn't a bird in the bush can fly a course as straight as course as high, higher than human sight goes, or something, or sometimes clouds, but there's always crows, drifting along for a scent of blood, with a smell of smoke and sign of flood, for never a bird or a beast has been with the sight as strong as scent as keen, as fires and floods, I'm the first about. For then the lizards and the mice run out, and I can swoop. I can make my swoop, and that's all they know. I am a whale on mice, said the boastful crow. The bee birds over the homestead flew and told each other the long day through. The crow, the cold has come. We must take our track. Now I'll make you a bet, said the laughing jack, for 100 mice. You dare not go with the little bee birds by the boastful crow. Said the boastful crow, I could take my ease and fly with little green birds like these. If they were flat out if they went flat out and they didn't did their best, I could have smoked and could take the rest. And he asked of the beavers circling around, "Now where do you spike tails? Think you're bound? We leave tonight, and our present plan is to go straight till we reach Japan. For each year on the same same day, we call out our children and start away, twittering, traveling night and day and night over the ocean and take our flight. As we rest a day for some lonely isles, a bit, we beg a ride for 100 miles on a steamer's deck, and away we go. We hope you'll come with us, Mr. Crow." But the old Black Crow was extremely sad. He said, "I reckon you're raving mad to talk of traveling night and day, and how in the world will you find your way?" So the beaver has answered, "If you please, that's one of our great mysteries. Now these things chanced in a long ago. I expect the facts with no doubt, you know. And even Jackass high and low will always laugh when he sees a crow."
Well done. It's a classic Banjo Patterson poem. Classic Banjo Patterson poem. So, enjoyed.
And he's such a joy to read, because you can usually just pick up his rhyme and flow and then just run with it. Good choice, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, now, in the meantime, the dynamic duo has arrived. And before they read, I put a poem of yours, AP, on the board that Kay chose that she would like to hear. So let's say hi to them. Hey, you two.
Hi. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Okay. So this was interesting because this was a palindrome but not named as such. This is Mirror by Drapes, and it goes a little bit like this. Curved by drapes as oval in frame, swerve gapes when body oval same, drifts towards less reflection of silhouette, shifts into white complexion pale set. Views conceive as mirror rose dane, excuse weave in imagery bows plain. Last tresses fall in bundle conferred, past all messes, tumbles hummingbird. Hummingbird tumbles, messes all past, conferred bundle into fall tresses last. Plain bows imagery and weave excuse, dane rose mirror as conceived views. Set pale complexion, white intershifts, silhouette of reflection left towards diffs. Same noble body, when gapes swerve, frame in oval, as drapes by curve.
Unmuted.
Yep, and I was running my mouth too. I said I was giggling at my comment at the bottom because I might have mentioned that show enough in the poem we started with today. It said it came out awesome, and the fact that she's in the mirror showing backwards makes the I wrote pantoum, I can't believe it, even more perfect, and it was like excellent Sherry show off. I'd have to look, but I bet you a lot of my poems say that to you. Great read. Kay, it's the one you requested. What did you think?
Well, yeah, you know, I like the way it stood out as far as reading it aloud and then hearing you read it. Yeah, I like how through the view of the picture prompt, but also the wording that came from it. As I said, I like the winding up of the view and drawing on the imagery, because as I saw the deception, the excuses, hands of time with the touch of nature, but at the end of the day, it also waxes beautifully with the pinch of reality. It all came together very nicely to bring its own story to the view. So wonderful, right?
Thank you, Pat. Thank you.
Awesome comment. And Stephen, what do you think?
Yeah, I remember this one. I remember the prompt, the mirrors. I like the way that this reads, too, and I think a palindrome is perfect for it, because what I wrote to you before was, you know, everyone looks at their reflection differently, and you know, some like what they see while others hate what they see, and I think that that reflects what's inside. And I think, yeah, I think this is just a perfect right to that prompt. Very well done. And you always impress me with the rhyming palindrome, man. How the hell, man? How the hell do you do that?
It's almost the only way I can do them now. I know it sounds silly, but it's sort of, if I don't do them rhyming, it seems they don't work as well. Anyway, strange.
Awesome. And Hatter, you want to comment?
Yeah, I always thought the image in a mirror was for a long time considered, I'm not evil, but magical, mystic, something like that. Anytime you can put that into a poem, I think it does. I'm saying it poorly. I'm self-medicated tonight, so excuse me.
Thank you.
Okay, well now, the poem that Kay is going to present from The Animals, Noah, forgot, is on the board. Kay, please.
Okay, yeah, this is a banjo poem. This is called Old Man Platypus. Far from the trouble and toil of town, where the reed beds sweep and shiver, look at a fragment of velvet brown. Old Man Platypus drifting down, drifting along the river. And he plays and dives in the river bends in a style that is most elusive, with few relations and fewer friends. For Old Man Platypus descends from a family most elusive. He shares his burrow beneath the bank of his wife and his son and daughter at the roots of the reeds and the grasses rank, and the bubbles show where our hero sank to its entrance underwater. Safe in their burrow below the falls, they live in a world of wonder where no one visits and no one calls. They sleep like little brown billiard balls with their beaks tucked neatly under. And he talks in a deep, unfriendly growl as he goes on his journey lonely. For he's no relation to fish nor fowl, nor to bird nor beast, nor to horned owl. In fact, he's the one and only. End poem.
Yes, indeed he is. Thank you. Properly read. Platypus are just an amazing animal, and I think yeah, banjo captures something of the platypus here, because they're, most animals are derivative of something else, and the banjo and the platypus is not derivative of anything. It's just sort of, it confused the heck out of people when people first saw it, because it's just so different. And I think he did it well, so thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome read. Thank you, Kay. And Stephen, I added your poem to the board.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to do something for you, AP, because, well, I said in my author's notes, I don't write palindromes. I've only written one, and that one almost pretty much happened on accident. So I wanted to bring you a palindrome, because I know you like them. And because I don't write them very often, I think in my author's notes that I use the KITS method, which, in case anybody doesn't know what that is, it's keep it simple, stupid, because that's probably the only way I can do a palindrome. But I call this Happy Birthday, AP. Keep birthdays happy, forwards and backwards, start to finish, day to night. Blow out the candles, night to day, finish to start, backwards and forwards. Happy birthdays keep. Happy birthday, AP.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks. I mean, I'm very pleased that you've had a go at the palindrome, because that, as you rightly say, they're not straightforward, and they turn your thinking inside out when you're trying to do them.
They are evil.
Thank you.
They're evil.
They're different. they're different. But I did want to say something just about the last poem too. That you might remember that the platypus had the reed bed sweep and sway. Well, that's actually a line out of the last stanza of The Man from Snowy River as well. So Banjo did a bit of stealing from his original earlier work, and it ended up in the platypus poem as well as The Man from Snowy River.
Cool.
Way cool. Okay, so let me see. Guys, did you want to push shows before I put up another poem?
Oh, yeah, we could do that, I guess. See, our next show is Monday night. It's the Mortuary of Shadows. It's our newest edition of Local Dark Legends, and we're looking at Skye's home state of New Hampshire. So we have four dark legends from the state of New Hampshire to check right to. And that's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Monday.
Funky.
Sounds way cool. All right. Well, what I'm going to do now is I am going to grab the poem that I chose from the book and bring it to the board. And where is it? There it is. This one, it struck me in the, I guess it's like the moral of the story. And also, it says in doggerel verse, which was intriguing.
Yes.
So I grabbed that one.
Yes.
And it's fun and very interesting. So this is A Dog's Mistake by Banjo Patterson. And here we go. He had drifted in among us as a straw drifts with the tide. He was just a wandering mongrel from the weary world outside. He was not aristocratic, mostly ribs and hair, with a hint of spaniel parent and a touch of native bear. He was very poor and humble and content with what he got, so we fed him bones and biscuits till heartened up a lot. Then he growled and grew aggression, treating orders with disdain, till at last he bit the butcher, which would argue what a brain. Now the butcher, noble fellow, was a sport beyond belief, and instead of bringing action, he brought half a shin of beef, which he handed on to Fido, who received it as a right and removed it to the garden where he buried it at night. 'Twas the means of his undoing for my wife, who stood his friend, to adopt the slang expression went in off the deepest end. For among the pinks and pansies, the gloxinas and the gorse, he had made an excavation like a graveyard for a horse. Then, when held consolation, which decided on his fate, 'twas in anger more than sorrow that we led him to the gate, and we handed him the beef bone as provisions for the day. Then we opened wide the portal, and we told him, on your way. End quote. Maybe
well,
teaching someone gratitude's an easy thing. And
feeling
entitled is not.
Because, very, very rarely did Banjo Patterson not write in perfect rhythm and rhyme. And doggerel is a form of irregular poetry that sort of runs with its rhythm rather than, and it has rhyme, but it runs with rhythm, and it's sort of loosely constructed, and it's sort of considered lowbrow. And so it's really unusual to get a right from Banjo in that sort of verse. So it's really interesting, Deb.
Yeah, I really like that one. Even though the dog got a little bit rude and got kicked out, I thought that it was like a pleasure to read, which leads me to another point. None of us would have ever probably heard of him had it not been for your love of his work. So it's so many little treasures that we've found over the years just because you said the name Banjo Patterson and started bringing it. So, it just seemed fitting to entertain you with his – animals that didn't get on the ark. So now, let me see. I think we will now go to another of your poems. And I'm going to grab one that, of course, you wrote since you read the other one recently. I have this one also written as you sat channeling Mr. Patterson. So if you would take us away.
Okie dokie. I will. So let me just say thank you very much to Laughing Soul for saying hello. This is the Western Zephyr after Banjo, and it is a 14er, which was a fairly familiar style to him. And it goes a little bit like this. As the gum trees here rustle on a turning of the breeze, a dancing, a Charleston, as they move upon by degrees. This was a chill morn, barely left a leaf here to flitter, till an anger pent from the north entered too, embittered. Had crossed over deserts and the red ochre burnt sands to get to these lush green gum trees dotted into their stands. Its fill of dry dust held as ground from the driest places, and so upon the tablelands it gathers as embraces. Venting as a dragon, this viscous breath wrenches the trees, swirls and makes them strain as a whip to roughest of seas, silences the magpies and galahs that here once twittered, as green leaves dancing upon the ground, the throne is littered. Scurrying as a plague of mice, to scarify across wide bands, seeking to generate smoke, will embolden by man's hands. Rules these wide plains and bypasses all their humble graces. This the zephyr found from the desert, speeds to burn spaces. End poem.
Awesome, Reed. I know I've said this to you before, but I can often tell, even when you don't just do a flat-out announcement that it's written to or because of a banjo poem, something comes out in you when you've been from your books and it shows in your poems. And like I said, although this one is marked that you wrote it to or after him, it's really cool how you step into his shoes and write these. And I really think if he ever got to read them, he would be impressed. The influence in his skill is showing all through it. I think I found this one on a list of yours. I wanted to bring one that meant something to you. So that's how this one went up here.
Yeah.
Hatter, what do you think?
Yeah.
What is a gum tree good for? What do you use it for?
Well, koalas eat them. And it's good for shade. That's probably about it.
Shade? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they must look pretty, too.
They do look nice if you're into, you know, they're nice looking trees.
Well, there you go. They look beautiful and give you shade. That's two great skills.
And they're also an indication, if you see gum trees, it's that part of the world gets a reasonable amount of rain. So you can tell how much rain an area gets by whether it's got gum trees or whether it's got shrubs or what the foliage is will tell you how much rainfall that area typically gets.
And being in Australia, how can it kill you?
I can't really. They just sort of stand there and, you know, they'll grow for hundreds of years if they're sort of left alone. And so they can get...
And what's the tree that drops 40-pound pine cones?
Oh, there's some different... Norfolk pines and stuff like that, Hatter, that can clean you up with pine cones, but the gum tree doesn't do any of that.
Okay.
All right. I have a switch bones. The other one died. Kay, would you comment on a peace poem?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Let me get back there. I have a bad habit of flitting everywhere. So, okay. Well, I like how this
I think this is great. As I said, it's a great contribution of literature that honors a favorite of yours, but it also adds your own style of writing that is unique in all of its places of artistry. It's a wonderful read.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Awesome comment. And Stephen, if you would comment on AP and then read the poem from the book, please.
Sure. Well, I told you in my comment, my brief comment, that I think this is a wonderful piece of poetry describing one hell of a breeze. And it definitely has shades of banjo as well, I think. And like Deb said, I would have never even known who he was if it wasn't for you. And I do enjoy his poems now, so I thank you for that too. This is an excellent write, AP.
No, thank you, Stephen. Thank you.
All right. So the one I have here is called Camouflage by Banjo Patterson. Beside the bare and beaten track of traveling flocks and herds, the woodpecker went tapping on, the postman of the birds. I've got a letter here, he said, that no one's understood, addressed as follows to the bird that's like a piece of wood. The soldier bird got very cross. It wasn't meant for her. The spur-wing plover had a try to stab me with a spur. The jackass laughed and said the thing was written for a lark. I think I'll chuck this postman job and take a stripping bark. Then all the birds for miles around came to lend a hand. They perched upon a broken limb as thick as they could stand. And just as old man Eaglehawk prepared to have his say, a portion of the broken limb got up and flew away. Then casting grammar to the winds, the postman said, that's him, the boobuck owl. He squats himself along a broken limb and pokes his beak up like a stick. There's not a bird, I vow, can tell you which is boobuck owl and which is broken bough. And that's the thing he calls his nest, that Jerry built affair. A bunch of sticks across a fork. I'll leave his letter there. A cuckoo wouldn't use his nest, but that's the odds to him. A bird that tries to imitate a piece of leaning limb. End poem.
Indeed it does. They're beautiful birds. They're bloody huge. They can be a couple of kilos, but very hard to separate from a branch if you see them. And we had a couple out the front, actually, about a couple of years ago, a huge bird and its little baby with it. And it's beautifully described there because they do camouflage exceptionally well. They're brilliant, brilliant birds. Thanks, Stephen.
Great read, Stephen. Thank you very much. And AP, if you turn your attention to the poem from the book that I just added, this poem is recorded for you by Sky, Sky, Sky. So I will push now, and she will read for you this day. And here we go.
White Cockatoo by AP Banjo Patterson. Now the autumn maze is growing, now the corn cob fills. Where the little river flowing winds among the hills, over mountain peaks outlying, clear against the blue, comes a scout in silence flying, one white cockatoo. Back he goes to where the meeting waits among the trees, says the corn is fit for eating, hurry if you please. Skirmishers, their line extending, shout the joyful news. Down they drop like snow descending, clouds of cockatoos. At their husking competition, hear them screech and yell. On a gum tree's high position, sits a sentinel. Soon the boss goes boundary riding, but the wise old bird, mute among the branches hiding, never says a word. Then you hear the strident squalling, here's the boss's son. Through the garden bushes crawling, crawling with a gun. May the shiny cactus bristles fill his soul with woe. May his knees get full of thistles. Brothers, let us go. Old Black Harry sees them going, sketches nature's plan, that one cocky too much knowing, all the same Chinaman. One eye shout and one eye winking, never shut the two. Chinaman go dead, me thinking, jump up, cockatoo. End poem.
There you go. It's really interesting. Sky had the rhythm of that down brilliantly there. She got the internal rhythm of the poem and the rhyme of the poem and just did a wonderful job reading it.
I agree. I think that he writes so flawlessly that he not that we're not great readers in these shows, but he makes it easy to sound like a great reader and to put emphasis because it just flows. It's a tribute to his brilliance, how well we can all read him. Okay, now we are really doing great with time. So, I mean, I still have two more friends who recorded, but I added on the board another one of yours. I got this one from your list of thousands or more. So if you would pick us up.
Excellent. And thanks to Stephen and thanks to Kay for being with us. I think we'd have to disappear. So thank you. And so this is my take stop. Thank you, guys. And I guess I better read it, Deb. So it goes a little bit like this. Nearly a summer's day in a deep and dark November, I stare at a red book alone, grazing inside leaf pages to the scrolls I go, my flesh seeking the sustenance I know. I take stock, what am I denying? We walk as one. Many heard that pledge aside. Lies burned in the psyche. Here not a number or a strife to lies, not late night or mafia beside. I take stock, why am I flying? Watch out the nook. Hear my poetry protects me. I am shielded in my armor. Hiding with the team, voices it would seem, we broadcast and as friends we be. We take stock, why are we writing? While a rock feels no pain. But lonely here never abide. End poem.
Awesome. You know, if I'm being totally honest, I chose it because it's an awesome poem on its own. I totally forgot that it was a song parody. So, like, extra added bonus. Who knew? I really forgot that you sang it last time. You, as you normally do, put in just enough of the sounds to make it flow just like the song. And this one, your range was showing. So, like, really, really a cool one. I think I have it. Yeah, I do. I have it on one of my favorite lists. Heather, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm a rock.
I'm a rock.
I'm a rock. What was that? Was that?
It's great.
I'm sure that was parody. To that song, right?
Yeah, it was. And to the, because it's got one of those great lines in it about my poetry will protect me, as that's from the original song, Hatter. And I just think it's such a great line, you know. That's why it's one of my favorites.
Excellent. I'm just now getting it. The link, it wasn't posted. I didn't get the post.
I thought I posted it.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I'm just that I didn't get it.
Oh, okay.
It just probably went. It probably went because of all the comments, Deb probably went up behind the screen, but that's okay.
Okay, cool. All right. Now, before I start the recording for the next one, I wanted to tell you that Phil the Poet was not able to do a recording, but he wanted me to make a point of telling you that he hopes you have a great birthday and that he wishes he would have had time to do it, but he's ending one job and starting another, and it's a little hectic. But happy birthday to you.
Thank you, and thanks, Phil. Thank you.
I thought that something was going on. I'll tell you that later because it didn't pan out, so I don't know. But anyway, let's stick with what did. Now, another friend has recorded a poem from the book. So I have a recording from none other than Gerald. So here we go.
The Diggers, written by A.B. Banjo Patterson. Read by Gerald Green. Bristling Billy the Porcupine, a person that nobody liked, sinking a shaft on an ant bed mine, came on a burrowing lizard's line, and the lizard was badly spiked. "You're a blundering fool," said the snake's half-brother, and that was how one thing led to another. Weary Willie the Wombat King said he was champion excavator. But the bristler said, "You ain't no such thing. You couldn't dig up a new potater." So a match was made on their mining skill, Bristling Billy and Weary Will. Both of the creatures were stout as steel, with knife-like claws that could dig forever. The wombat dug with a greater zeal, but he hadn't the style or the action clever of Bristling Billy, who looked a winner till he struck some ants and he stopped for dinner. Down where the ants had hid their young, underground in a secret tunnel, scooping them up with his sticky tongue into his mouth that was like a funnel. "Why should I dig for your wager scanty," said he, "when I'm feeling so full and anty?" A kangaroo who has lost his cash was wild at this most absurd comeuppance. "Now listen, you poor ant-eating trash. I'll give you a kick in the ribs for 2 pence. "Well, when I've finished with this here diet," said Bristling Billy, "you come and try it." Bristling Billy the Porcupine, a person that nobody likes, wanders away on his lonely line, rattles his fearful spikes. Says he, "There's none of you long-haired squibs is game to give me a kick in the ribs."
There you go. Thank you, Cheryl. It was a great read, as always. And the interesting thing about that poem is that Banjo was writing that in the 1920s or so, and he called it the Porcupine. It wasn't until 1961 that we realized that the echidna was different from the porcupine, and that's why we now call them echidnas. But they're very, very different genus compared to porcupines, much smaller too. But it's interesting that that's why the porcupine was in the book, and it wouldn't be today.
Wow, that is pretty cool. Okay, so let me tell you where we are. Okay, we still have one more recording from a friend from the book.
Yep.
We have the part 7 of the audio drama from Gonzo.
We're all gone. Yes. Yes.
And then I thought we would end the show because with your favorite, because I don't think we can really have a birthday show and not include the man from Snowy River. So my question to you is, before the closing poem, was there something, one of yours that you would like to read between Banjo and the closing Banjo pattern? I mean, between Gonzo and the closing Banjo song.
Well, I think we should go Gonzo next. yeah, and do his piece, and because, you know, they've done, he's done a terrific job and introduced me to new software that I'm badly trying to learn, and he's always, you know, does a fantastic job with his pieces. So I think we go to Gonzo first, and then we do the other two, Deb.
Okay, then that is what we'll do. We will. I will grab that link right here and bring it to the board, and then we'll have the last friend read, and then we will have you read.
Yes.
And here's the link for Gonzo. It's always exciting when we get the next part going. So here we go.
One rich man in ten with a satisfied mind.
Jack sat bare in his wicker chair as his wild copper-colored hair covered skin unaware. All the while, a familiar tune blared in the air. Proud at his action taken, had he been mistaken and become complacent, Sleepy would have sliced him into bits like bacon. Still in his mind, he couldn't find the peace he desired, for he realized the design of revenge would not tire. No body, no murder, no evidence left, but also no way of confirming her death. He wished to be patient, debonair and confident in her defeat, but all he can think is,
she'll kill me in my sleep.
Scared by a cracking switch alerting someone else was there, Jack spied eyes through the glass with a fast blast of the chickens. He cracked the glass and approached with tact and fear.
I saw that. I know you're out there.
Jack spotted Sleepy standing alone in the woods. He fired a second shot to her chest, but it appeared to be no good. Sleepy tactically dodged each egg without a single motion.
Must be a spell or some kind of potion causing this commotion. I swear there's no way you're walking away from this place.
Before firing more eggs indiscriminately every which way, a new image of Sleepy appeared on display. Perplexed and confuzzled, Jack snarled and struggled to stumble out a mumble describing his troubles.
You're a ghost. You're just a figment of my imagination. I'm losing my goddamn mind.
Fear coiled in Jack, awaiting reprisals or the specter's denial, but nothing seemed to keep his shattered courage intact. For what Jack saw, if he had exercised discretion, was not Sleepy at all. It was just her reflection.
Hi, Jack.
The magic mirror suddenly appeared on the window facing his way. Realizing his mistake, Jack quickly turned away, but it was too late as Sleepy sealed his fate with a sword to the heart standing inches from his face.
Bye, Jack.
With a flick and a twist, Jack turned into a fountain with such volume an artist could speckle a mountain.
Money.
His unfolded flesh bloomed like a crescent, harsh, such a lesson, but he had to respect it. Sleepy glared at the mirror, expecting some dark irreverence.
We're gonna make a lot of money on that bird.
I'm gonna keep a hold of him. I need to make sure he has a proper home with someone that will use that wealth to help others.
Or, and this is a really good, serious idea, we can beat by the little and then we can eat him, and nobody gets any money.
That's fair, too.
Sleepy headed out the door as the record skipped its song.
Money can't buy love that's grown cold, love that's grown cold.
So, if a queen dies silently in her castle and no one knows,
is she really dead?
It won't be silent. I can guarantee that.
Unbeknownst to Sleepy, the queen sat in her royal chambers making wagers in her favor behind the political scenes. Elderly and stressed, her brow furrowed from oppressed anger, jealousy, and derangement still quelling over Sleepy's engagement.
She cannot be discovered to be who she really is, as long as that pointless quest of hers keeps her away from the governor's chambers. I see no reason to make her stray the paw.
But my queen, she has already killed
a bunch of useless, overpaid mercenaries. Do you know what the greatest thing about mercenaries are?
My queen?
If they die, you just hire more. I want this place swimming with them. When she does show up, and I know she will, we won't be unprepared.
Yes, my queen.
And as for you, your loyalty has been on question. You will be handsomely rewarded for your services. After your release from your prison, of course. Only providing you bring her here, alone and as ignorant as the day she woke. Now, one more time before I slumber. Say it.
Thou
thou art the fairest in the land.
Go, Deb. I really like this one. Let me say that I particularly liked your choice of backing music to actually give you a few lyrics. Satisfied Mind from Johnny Cash. How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I could do things my way? But little they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in ten with a satisfied mind. It's no fantastic lyrics. And then with that sitting in the background, the firing of the eggs indiscriminately every which way, a new image of Sleepy appeared on display, perplexed and confuzzled. So you've got to be right on top of your game, as Hatter said earlier, for you to have to make up a word and for it to actually make sense. So I really like those pieces of it. So thank you, Gonzo. Deb, your choice.
Yeah, I each one gets better and better and more intricate, and I agree with the background music and stuff like that was really awesome. For a second, when it started and it broke into song, I thought, what did I do? And then as he went back into this part of the story, it was just like, you know, okay, it is the right one. I panicked for a minute. I don't remember him singing before. The others that do this with him, they're all so talented. It's such a joy to hear them do the work, to hear the difference in the voices and the elaborate details. And, I mean, what can you say? It's just incredible. And each week he leaves us waiting for more. And I have to tell you, remember that week that we thought it was the last one? I was so bummed. I'm thinking, wait a minute, something's not right. So to find out that there was more, you know, it was like, oh, thank goodness.
Yes.
You start to get used to it. Yeah. It's like, you know, you more and more and more. And they don't disappoint. Splendid job. Start to finish.
They're clever. Yeah, brilliantly written. Clever. Clever work. Yeah.
What do you think of that one, Hatter?
Did you want to say a few words?
I love them all, man. I love he's got to put some time in it. He's got the equipment. He's got the knowledge of how to. I love the different voice. You know, some will sound like they're in a closet.
Yeah.
Some sound like they're in the bathroom. Some will sound like they're, you know, in a crowded room. They're excellent.
Yeah,
I love every part of this.
Really,
every one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Okie doke, Pet. Well, we have a couple of bits and pieces. We're in your hands, Deb.
Okay, Doug. Well, this is also a recording from the book. And this one was recorded and sent in for your birthday pleasure by Cal. So here we go.
Cool.
'Twas the dingo pup, the dam that said, it's time I work for my daily bread. Out in the world I intend to go, and you'd be surprised at things I know. There's a wild duck's nest in a sheltered spot, and I go right down and I eat a lot. But when he got to his destined prey, he found the ducks had flown away. But an egg was left that would quench his thirst. So he bit the egg, and it straightaway burst. It burst with a bang. And he turned and fled, for he thought the egg had shot him dead. Oh, mother, he said, let's clear right out, or we'll lose our lives with the bombs about. And it's lucky I am that I'm not blown up. It's a very hard life, said the dingo pup.
There you go. Thank you, Cal. I think it's the first time I've ever heard Cal reading something that was rhyming, Deb.
Me too.
Is a non-rhymer. He did a fine job of that. Thank you, Carl. That was really cool. I like that.
So we covered quite a few. I think there's only like maybe four or five pieces that we didn't put in for one reason or another. But the whole point was to make sure that you were smiling as much as possible today. So I hope that's the case right now.
No, it was fun.
And as I said earlier, go ahead, sorry.
No, it was really fun. Thanks to all the people who lined up and read the poems. It's great. It's a great poem, and they all did a fantastic job.
Awesome. And as I had said earlier, no celebration of, as Hatter likes to call you, the man from Snowy River, is complete without the poem. So whenever you are ready,
yes,
the closing poem on the board.
Okay. Well, I've actually, rather than get the hard copy, I've gone to my, or soft copy, I've gone to my hard copy of the book. So this is from a 1913 edition that I'm reading. This is The Man from Snowy River. And, of course, it goes a little bit like this. There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away and had joined the Wild Bush Horses. He was worth £1,000, so all the cracks had gathered to the fray. All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight. For the bushmen love hard riding where the wild bush horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight. There was Harrison who made his pile when Pardon won the cup, the old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could ride beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse and man could go. And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand. No better horseman ever held the reins. For never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. He learned to ride while droving on the plains. And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast. He was something like a racehorse undersized, with a touch of team or pony, three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread, and he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. But still, so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay, and the old men said that horse will never do. For a long and tiring gallop, lad, you'd better stop away. Those hills are far too rough for such as you. So he waited sad and wistful, only Clancy stood his friend. I think we ought to let him come, he said. I warrant he'll be with us when he's wanted at the end, for both he and his horse are mountain bred. He hails from Snowy River up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough. For a horse's hooves strike firelight from the flintstones every stride, the man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but nowhere yet such horsemen have I seen. So he went. They found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow. And the old man gave his orders, boys, go get him at the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them, try and wheel them to the right. Ride boldly, lad, never fear the spills. For never yet was a rider that could keep them of in sight, if once they gained the shelter of those hills. So Clancy rode to wheel them. He was racing on the wing, where the best and boldest riders take their place. Them, and he made the ranges ring with the stock whip, as he met them face to face. Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but they saw their well-loved mountain full in view, and they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew. Then fast the horsemen followed where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread, and the stock whips woke the echoes and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead. And upward, ever upward, the wild horses held their way. The mountain ash and Currajong grew wide. And the old man muttered fiercely, we may bid that mob good day. No man can hold them down the other side. When they reached the mountain summit, even Clancy took a pull. It well might make the boldest hold their breath. The wild hop scrub grew thickly and the hidden ground was full. The wombat holes in any slip was death. But the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head and he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer and he raced down the mountain like a torrent down its bed while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet. He kept the falling timber in his stride and the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat. It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride. Through the stringy barks and saplings on the rough and broken ground, down the hillside at a racing pace he went. And he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of that terrible descent. He was right among the horses as they climbed the further hill, and the watchers on the mountain, standing mute, saw him ply the stock whip fiercely. He was right among them still, as he raced among the clearing in pursuit. Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain valleys met, and the ranges, but a final glimpse reveals, on a dim and distant hillside, the wild horses racing met, with the man from Snowy River at their heels. And he ran them single-handed till their sides were white with foam. He followed like a bloodhound on their track, till they halted cowed and beaten, and he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back. But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur. His pluck was still undaunted, and his courage fiery hot, and ever yet, as a mountain horse occurred. And down by Kosciuszko, where the pine-clad ridges rise, their torn and rugged battlements on high, where the air is clear as crystal, and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky. And where around the overflow the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes and the rolling plains are wide, the man from Snowy River is a household word today, and the stockman tell the story of his ride. End poem.
Awesome. The man can write, and this man can read.
Yeah,
I tell you.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant the way he tells a story, and that he does it in rhyme and long form rhyme, and just a all time sort of country classic piece that right.
Must be pretty cool too to realize just how many of us read him now because you introduced him to us and are impressed. I mean, he can pull you into any subject he's writing about just because he's so spot on with his writing and you know, the imagery.
Yeah.
And the whole deal.
Yeah.
I think that it's amazing that all these years later, his poems are still like, I don't know if fresh is the word I'm looking for, but like you can just you know, sometimes you'll look at a poem from back in the day and it seems, I apologize if anybody gets insulted, but juvenile or like,
yeah,
I don't understand what
the
is going on.
Sort of doughty, has that very English word, but sort of well-meaning but not current.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing
about
banjos is it's actually... it's aged very well.
Yeah, I think that's what I was trying to say. Like his poetry stands the test of time, and he's still bringing people joy all these years later.
Agreed. Yes.
At this point, I'm certainly hoping that you have a nice smile on your face and that you're feeling all relaxed and looking forward to your birthday dinner, and
yes.
Hatter and I
Thank
are
you.
Thrilled that we got
yes.
to spend part of your birthday with you. And
No, it's been
I just
fun. Thank you. Thank you for all those people to write and to read, and thank you for writing your piece too, Deb. Thank you.
My pleasure. And I want to say thank you to Kay and Stephen and Linda and Sky and Cal and Gerald for reading those poems, and to Gonzo and the crew for another amazing episode, and to Hatter for co-hosting with me, and AP, like I said.
I'm here.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thanks,
so,
Deb. Thank you. I'm getting off, but aren't we all?
So we're going to dinner.
I'm off to Japanese with the kids pad up, so we're off to one of the better Japanese restaurants in Melbourne.
What will you be ordering?
Well, it just depends. Probably sashimi and sushi to start with, because that's Ava's favourite. And then from there, we'll probably all go our own ways and share some stuff in the middle. But you sort of can't go wrong. Whatever you get, it's going to be cool. It's not a bad choice.
That's cool.
Thing you want to say before we close out, Hatter?
Video. All of your phone. In a Japanese restaurant.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, I wondered, Mr. A.P. Taylor, we have four songs by Dire Straits in the studio at the moment.
Yeah.
We have Brothers in Arms. We have So Far Away. We have Sultans of Swing or Walk of Life. We push one of them and go off.
There's no
choice. What do you think?
Absolutely no choice for me, because our Brothers in Arms will win every time. Because it's such a brilliant song, and because it was used in one of the classic episodes of The West Wing, Two Cathedrals. So, Brothers in Arms, it is. Mm-hmm.
And I thought you might just see it, so I loaded it in today. So, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the end of the beginning of AP's birthday celebration. As he struts off to go enjoy some more, we will go out with Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms. Here we go.
Thanks, Deb. Thanks, Deb.
Through these fields of destruction, baptisms of fire, I've witnessed your suffering.
And did recordings for my birthday show. Thank you to Deb for her farm and for being there as always. And we'll be back next week at the same bat time channel. Thanks, everybody.
Happy birthday, AP.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, Anna. Thanks, Deb. Thank you.
Thanks, Deb.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.